Moore. Oh, that's an intercept for Stockdale. And he'll race clear. It's a lovely piece of skill from Hugh Jones. And he's got Hawk. Can he put him away? It's an awful pass. Scotland have butchered that chance. Fundiaki, ring ropes. Stockdale. Stockdale scores in the corner.
That reaction says it all. France have beaten England. It also means that Ireland are crowned the champions.
I'm Andy McGeady and you're listening to The Hard Yards on this most joyous of Mondays. Ireland are Six Nations champions with a week to spare and we have an opportunity of a Grand Slam next Saturday in Twickenham. Joined in studio by James Downey.
Andy, how are you?
And Kevin McLaughlin.
Good morning.
To discuss the win against Scotland and look ahead to a massive game this weekend. Gents, Kev, we haven't seen you for a while.
Yeah, I've been busy, had my hands full of nappies.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Having my son was born, Archie McLaughlin, just over 3 weeks ago now. And
Six Nations debut 2038, is it?
Yeah, so no. I think it's going to be tiddlywinks and chess, to be honest. Like, he's the lads are going to slag me. He's going to be going to Gonzaga, so chess champion rather than rugby champion probably. But he settled in well. It's been full on. I think everyone's kind of saying, oh, like, you just, nothing can prepare you for it, and that's kind of true. You've got to just put your head down and figure it out yourselves, and that's what we've been kind of mucking through the last few weeks. But he's watched his first couple of Six Nations games the last couple of weekends and enjoying it. Fast asleep for both games, so even through all my shouts and roars. So
how's the sleep going?
Sleep is good. It's patchy. I've been mentally preparing for it for a long time, you know. And like, this has come from someone who's used to 8 or 9 hours clean sleep every single night, going into like 2 or 3 hour stretches max. Like, you're delighted if you get a 3 hour stretch. So it's just adapting to it, I suppose. So you've been through it yourself, Annie, you know.
Yep.
You know what it's like. So
no,
just get
good
through it one night at a time.
Yeah, no, it's good. Excellent. Congratulations again.
Thank you.
Good to have you back. Jimmy's been holding the fort without you now.
Yeah, it's good to have him back, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's been a while, been a couple of weeks, so and Pat's been subbing in as well, and Mike McCarthy. So yeah, some
it's
interesting
great to,
people.
Great to have some actual rugby knowledge around the table for once. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Rather than a spoofer.
Plenty to talk about from the weekend. That was decent.
Wasn't bad, was it? You're going to be happy at the 5 points.
But it was kind of weird. Like, at the time, you know, thinking this puts us in a good situation, and then you have to kind of wait and go, oh yeah, we won the championship a week early.
Yeah, I expected us to win the championship.
Yeah,
I also expected us to pump Scotland, and it's easy to say that now, listen, like, obviously hindsight and all that, but like,
if you tell the bookies that you expected to, apparently they'll still pay out.
Yeah, I didn't put my money where my mouth was, but I told a few people 12 to 15 they won by 20. But like, I think the psychology of the game was really challenging for Scotland. You know, they went on a big one. They hadn't beaten England for a long time. You have to celebrate those games. They had a trophy. It was only a Calcutta Cup, but you still got to celebrate it. You don't get that many moments like that. So, like, you've got this challenge. If you've got to celebrate and enjoy the moment versus we're playing Ireland in 2 weeks, they're better than England, and we're playing them away from home. And I actually thought they did slightly better than I expected, and a couple of really big opportunities that could have changed the momentum of the game. But Ireland have the players and the ability to swing games at the moment, and I wasn't really that concerned at any point. The first half was tight, it was loose. Ireland actually probably wanted to keep it quite tight, and as it loosened up, like, Scotland came more and more into it. They're so dangerous in those counter-attacking moments. Guys like Hugh Jones, Stuart Hogg, you're kind of holding your breath when they get the ball in their hand. Even that guy Blair Kinghorn, who came in, looked really dangerous.
He deserves to be dangerous with a name like that.
Yeah, he does. But like, some of the Irish players are big moments again. Like, Dan Levy, every single game he's coming up with a big moment. I think that turnover he got on the Irish 22 was a key moment, because Scotland were building pressure. They were looking like scoring, and then Ireland get a penalty, kick to touch, build a little bit of pressure on the other side. I thought Johnny Sexton's defence, when Hugh Jones made that break, it was a 2-on-1, and like, it was so smart what Johnny did. He backpedaled. Because if he had a decision to make, he either had to fly at Hugh Jones and tackle him, or he could backpedal and force a late decision. Mm. And what he did by moving backwards and turning side on is he gave a little bit of a chance for the support to catch up, made Hugh Jones force a late pass, and they end up not scoring from him. That was key as well.
Well, tell you what, this hurts me, right, as the unashamed Hugh Jones, you know, fanboy here. Jesus, how do you not make that pass?
Yeah, if you've got to expect an international centre to put that away, you know, and that's...
He's not a passing centre, though.
But you but do you not think you have to be out of 13 though?
Agreed.
I guess if you're playing with Peter Horn there, who's another second 10, you know, a second receiver. But if Alex Dunbar is there, what way do you do that? You put Alex Dunbar at 13 and then you...
Dunbar doesn't chip over the top and make the break in the first place.
I actually think the balance is good. I think the decision is between Dunbar and...
Jones.
Who's the 12?
Horn.
And Horn. Because I think... I just think Hugh Jones at 13, he's got so much pace for that outside break. And he's got the footwork and he makes yards. But I just don't think he's a passing 13. I think actually...
I don't think you have to be a passing 13 to make that pass. Yeah. That's a...
But Johnny made it really hard for him. He did. A top-class 13. Like, a top-class passing 13. Excuse me. He is a top-class player, but a top-class passing 13.
I think you've been really kind. I think that if you're talking about a really good test player, which we think Jones is, and it's the attacking side of his game, which is his strength... Yeah. He's making that pass. An attacking international back row could make that pass.
I agree with that. But 95% of defenders or fullbacks there fly at him and it makes the pass easy. Yeah.
Okay, so tell me exactly what Sexton and Earls did differently than maybe other people would facing the threat of Jones running straight at them along with Stuart Hogg. And before we get to that, Jimmy, tell me what Stuart Hogg does that's a little bit smart here.
Yeah, no, it's extremely intelligent play. When the ball goes out and Finn Russell throws it in and they throw two wide passes, Stuart Hogg stays on the 10 on the far side and just trails across way in front of the ball, 20 metres, in front of the ball. And when Jones makes that break, he just joins up with him. Like, he doesn't even run back. And it's such a smart line that you can... There's a camera angle which is behind the post and you can just see him jogging across the front. Literally joins up with Jones, and it's such an intelligent line.
Experienced props will be familiar with that line.
Do you know who was the king of it? Right. Was Keith Gleeson.
In front of the ball.
He used to always, he scored a load of tries where he was just on someone's shoulder after they made a break. And I was constantly like, how is he so fast that he's catching up with our wingers and stuff? And I watched a few videos back, and he used to do exactly that. He used to be able to anticipate a break, or he'd know a play that was coming that was likely to end in a break. And he'd stay in front of the ball, and then he'd just turn his, you know, at a kind of 90 degrees or 45 degrees, change his angle.
Yeah.
And he'd be on the guy's shoulder. It's so smart.
That's how Hogg gets there, right? Mm. But facing this, Sexton's looking straight across. Earl just coming across.
Yeah.
Now, tell me what Sexton does that's smart.
So, your coach there, you just have to tackle the guy. Mm-hmm. Because the worst thing you can do is accept a dummy there, okay? So you gotta go at him and you gotta tackle him, and then at least he's gotta make the pass, and there's a chance that the pass goes wrong. But Sexton's looking at him going, he's got too much time. I've got to give our time a little bit of support to catch up, which will make the pass a little bit more difficult. He backs off. So in that,
so he makes him delay the pass.
Is making Hugh Jones go, okay, will I pass? Will I pass? Will I show and go? And he ends up kind of half giving a really
as you say,
unconvincing pass.
He's too much time, doesn't he, nearly?
He's too much time.
It's like, right, I have it. It's a 2-on-1, but I've got to run for 15 metres with it. And this
was not the only incident. So Joe Schmidt after the game, I thought he was quite perceptive. Joey Schmidt is a perspective man, but it's a good comment. It was a 20-point score in a one-score game. You know, that's what he was getting to here. And it was a one-score game. Ireland were blessed to be so far ahead going in at half-time after Scotland butchered a couple of things.
Yeah, they left a lot of points out there, didn't they?
They left a bonus point on the table. Yeah. They could have easily had four tries. Yeah.
Peter Horn makes a break up the right-hand side, and he throws a skip pass over King.
Into touch.
Yeah, Blair King over his head. Yeah, and Hugh Jones
that takes
is right on the shoulder.
Blair King is a tall man.
But
I think even look to the way they do things, they love a wide skip pass, which it goes back to the intercept as well for Stockdale. Yeah, there's no need to throw that skip pass.
Schmidt said they'd worked on it. They'd seen them throwing the long ball. They'd said, Stockdale, you tuck in.
But even that Finn Russell pass that everyone was getting very, very ridiculously excited about. It was a beautiful pass, but it had intercept written over it.
I'd
say they used that one as the example. Goes, guys, be ready for a pass like this. It's try time for us when they throw it, you know?
It was a thing of beauty, though.
It was a thing of beauty. Absolutely, everyone's got to clap it. But on the other hand, it literally is a coach's worst nightmare when he sees that ball in the air for 3 seconds.
It's just hanging there, isn't it? Yeah, if it's a bullet and it's zipped, absolutely. But there's a couple of opportunities that, if Ireland hadn't scored just before half time, it was pretty clinical as well to get that score up.
So I scored before halftime and then in the 10 minutes after halftime. That puts a game away.
Similar to Wales, but Jimmy, like, I was looking at it, I'm sure you were as well. It looked like a tough game. It was fast. Like, I played against Glasgow when they're in that mould, and it's hard. It's really fucking hard. Yeah.
They would not
from everywhere. Yeah. They wouldn't even take a line out. They were throwing everything.
We were talking about that just because, you know, we're in earlier than you are, Kev. We were talking about that. Like, Scotland did not wait for anything.
No,
they just said, quick throw in to themselves. Great to watch. If you're a fan, it's brilliant. Yeah. But the pace is hectic.
Yeah. No, it is. It is. But it's the smart of trying to get teams out of sync, and they're not organised and not ready. And, like, even when they're taking the quick line, they're doing it for a reason, to try and isolate some of the loose forward or the front five guys who are out in the wide channels. And they're... You can see two passes are covering the field.
Yep.
And they're running at these forwards who are feel exposed out in that open space, and they're just like, oh no,
but
what are we doing here?
Southern Hemisphere, particularly Australia and New Zealand, have always been very, very good at that. Where is the space? Get it over there. Two passes will do it. Scotland are really good at it now, and I love to see it because, again, as a fan, it's brilliant. But get the ball out to the fast guys, target people, bully people where they're currently weak.
But then it's high risk, high reward, yeah, but it's like the flip side then is there's intercepts, there's errors, there's a lot of errors. And we've spoken before about, like, the high percentage of Ireland's possession. Ireland squeeze teams out of it, like, you know, they frustrate teams so much with that possession. You look at the converse styles in terms of, we get into a 22, Scotland start moving the ball around the 22, looking for mismatches, opportunities. Ireland slow it down and they try and just hold on to possession. Exactly. And they're very, very good at it, you know.
And the problem with Scotland is that they don't actually have the players to play a different game. They have good athletes in the front five, but they don't have a front five that can actually dominate a team in the scrum and the maul. And, like, Ireland, we're always going to do that, score a couple of tries.
And they've a light back row as well. The back row is built to do one thing. They're not
turnovers.
Built, and that's fine. There was an interesting comment made. I think I was watching the game mostly on BBC. So it was Scotty Hastings or Gordon Darcy said this. They said Scotland were chasing the game and they were talking about the Ireland bench, and the Ireland bench was stacked. They're going, yeah, well, actually, most of the players Scotland needs to chase the game are already playing. They're the starters. They don't have the second wave to bring in and change
things
up.
And the Irish bench made a massive difference the weekend. The energy, the likes of Geordie and Ian Henderson,
he was very good,
Jack McGrath, like Nugget, those guys coming in and just getting go forward immediately. And Joe would always, like, he expects that from his bench. There's no, you know, like,
but standards don't drop when they come off, like, you know. It's even sometimes they kick on a bit, like, you know, it's like 30 minutes on, it's happy, it's like, oh, change over, and normally be like, oh, he's gone, oh no, what are we going to do? Or this is brilliant. And as a Scottish player, they're saying, okay, your man's gone, brilliant, oh, here comes Jack McGrath now,
here's two Lions, fresh guy.
You know, it's unbelievable.
We've got to talk about the man of the tournament, though, in my view, is Sexton, right? So, and the key to us having a chance to get in the Grand Slam is he's played pretty much every minute.
Okay.
And, like, when is the last time Johnny's gone four games in a row for Ireland without getting a knock?
We know he has got a knock, okay? So, again, before the match, Keatley's out there warming up, Jimmy. You were watching.
I was watching him because
Keatley was.
So beforehand, people had spoken about he was getting back spasms. You'd looked at, before the Wales game, he was getting a bit of treatment and stuff. And to be honest, he hasn't been kicking too well. Do you know, at points, okay, look, it's amazing. We're still getting away with these. We're still getting wins. But Sexton was taking his kicks, but he didn't go outside the 22 for kicks. I don't know his normal routine, so I'd have to look at it again to compare. But he was taking the short kicks, wasn't kicking much out of hand. Keatley was kicking a good few. I think Murray had one or two. Carberry was kicking. But again, percentages would be very different. But then I was kind of like looking at him for the first couple of minutes, and he was all right. But then he's doing the little chip and chase, so obviously he's still all right. But even some of the decisions he's making, and normally, like, he went for a shot at goal for a right footed kicker, was on the wrong hand side of the.
It's also bad. That's his slot where he has missed a few over the years, and it didn't look good. You know, he's pushed some. This one was a hook.
Yeah.
He's not quite right, but the rest of the game is awesome. Right,
oh,
now.
Brilliant! Yeah, he's bringing so much extra to
Jesus. It's unbelievable.
Johnny's always got a knock. Like,
yeah,
he's never played a game in his entire career without a knock. And like, this is a
kicking knock. This is something which is definitely
I don't know. He knocked over a couple from the touchline. The tactic going into this game would have been, like, him and Joe would have decided before the game that they're going to kick the touch.
Well, it made sense. Right. So Ireland went.
But then it was. But then I thought it was a strange decision why he'd kick. We had a penalty. He'd kick from the. That side for like the wrong side for right footed kicker, and then
that was because we were 13
that,
points.
That was to put the game away. That was to put the game away. And so at that time, it seemed like the right decision.
But do you think I was actually thinking that we're stronger than this Scottish pack? Yeah. We can get it there, we can get them all, and we can drive them over like back our mauls. Because I think we went away from a bit of set piece for a while, and I thought that when we did, they were under pressure.
I think the decision at the start is based on look, if you look at it, it's if we win 40 points to 35, it's better than winning 10 points to 5 because the bonus point becomes very, very important. Now, England losing, that meant it actually didn't matter at all, no matter what you read or listen to. But later on, you're sort of going, well, actually, this game is much tighter than it seems on the scoreboard, and Scotland can score. So that was put in the game. I think the game situations were slightly different. But before we move on to the England game, actually, Dan Levy probably needs another chat. I mean, that's the third, Ireland's third choice seven, is that fair? Ireland and Leinster's third choice seven?
Not third choice anymore.
No,
certainly not.
Man has done.
He looks honestly like Sean O'Brien did 10 years ago. That kind of fearless, goes out there, does his job, plays with a smile on his face, which I like. You know, he always seems to be enjoying himself. He never seems to be under pressure. He just goes out and does it. And like what really impressed me about him is his consistency. Never really makes mistakes. Has about four or five big moments a game consistently. And just seems to be relishing the game and actually is a great balance with the other two guys at the moment.
The Italy game, he had a couple of moments that people were looking at, but he's made up for that in the last two.
What's that?
In the Italy game. But he's made up for that in a big way.
Like 100%. And like you're looking for guys to step up in the bigger games, and no disrespect to Italy, but the big games now in the last few weeks have been Wales and Scotland. And he has had match-turning moments in those. Yeah. And I just love the balance because CJ is carrying 20, 25 times a game. Between Pete and Dan, they're carrying a bit, but like they're getting through so much breakdown.
So much work. Yeah. It's great to watch. He's brought his form from Leinster in, you know, and like he's such a hard man to get off the ball. And he seems to produce these moments in that 22 situation, these big moments. And that's these are the things that are turning games as well, you know, in a tight game down the line. Like going into World Cups and you can bring someone on or start him. Unbelievable moments.
Have we mentioned Gary Ringrose yet? Seems remarkable that we haven't.
No, I don't know how. Like for me, he was a Sunday player.
Jesus.
Completely like unbelievable, wasn't it? Like for someone who hasn't played.
What does he play? 50 odd minutes against the Kings. Yeah. That's it. And then straight back in and plays like that.
Season,
probably the best player on the pitch.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Defensively, so smart. Like just didn't make decisions for Scotland. Just let them. Like, there's one, like we spoke before, there was one where he just kind of slides across. They're missing a nine in defence. They're pushing it out into the wide channels and he's just letting them do it and then just pushes it into touch, you know, and Blair Kinghorn, or I think it was Blair Kinghorn was, yeah.
It was Kinghorn or Jones, one of the two.
Yeah.
And how hard is it to defend the 13?
I could never, like sometimes lads used to go, we play left and right and I was going, oh man, I used to feel so exposed. But you would, like it's just like, okay, because I prefer there's someone kind of left and right of me and then in 13, I was like, where's my winger? What's he doing?
If someone comes short, what do I do?
Yeah.
So you've got this huge space to fill.
And you're going to have someone who can run a short line at you, and then I have to have the ability to read that and also get out and cover this yardage. I remember Kieran Lewis used to be so good at it. He was so quick to, like to have that speed to read it. And even if he made a wrong decision, he could get away with it because he was so quick across the ground. But Ringrose is so smart.
And the key is, like, you got to be, if you turn your shoulders in, as soon as you do that, the pass is gone. Yeah.
Hips have to be square. You have to keep, there's a lot of traffic coming at you. And he just if you can sit back and have that patience to kind of go, yeah, let you do it. Okay, let someone come short, but as you then read it and push off in behind.
But with the ball, I mean, on both sides of the ball, he was fantastic. With the ball in hand, he was Jonathan Sexton with the loop and the speed of that bullet pass.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And like, I'd almost expect that attack from him. He does it every single time he plays. It was just the defensive stuff, because a lot of times it'll be the defence that actually really takes a while to come back after coming back from an injury. So that's what I was really watching for. And he was just so sharp.
He was.
It seems like the mind and the body were just right up to speed at like the highest of levels, you know, against one of the best attacking teams.
Okay, the very last thing before we move on to England and Paris, and England for us, the Kian Healy incident. It didn't look great when we're looking back on it. So Kian Healy's, it's in the second half, and he's, is it the second or the first half, Jimmy?
first second, or is it? No, so they're playing right to left as I was looking at it. So that was first half.
Yeah, the other left, says McGeady. Yeah, he takes a bang. He's being treated. The play then goes back. It was actually going so close to him, I thought the ref would blow it up because the play was going that way. But he just
Scott's played into it. That's what it looked like.
He pops up. He's wandering around a bit. He's walking in not a brilliantly controlled way towards the next breakdown. He's then involved in another breakdown, and then Ireland get the ball and he makes a carry. The medic tries to get on again. There is no, he doesn't go out for HIA. I think that the official line is that he was a bit of a shoulder, but it didn't look great.
No, it didn't look great, and I think you look at the replay as well, and because I thought it was a shoulder arm, and he's holding his arm, his left arm, and because as you say, until they showed the replay, I didn't notice it as much as you did. I went, oh, he's done something to his arm, because until the replay shows that he clearly gets an elbow, I think, from Stuart Hogg, or like an accidental elbow from Stuart Hogg. But then, yeah, I don't know. It's obviously going to be looked at, I'm sure. But then you can see he was getting treated, and then he bounces up and makes a tackle.
Bounces up, and you'd wonder. To me, again, I'm not the medic, and you're not the player, right? But it looks like a situation where the player, some other part of the brain, has kicked in and says, "I need to get involved in this play. There's Scottish players running towards me. I need to be involved." And you're not stopping a Cian Healy from rushing
myself
towards that player.
I've done it myself in that situation where you're getting treated and suddenly you're like, fuck, I need to get up and get back in the line here.
And what are you doing? You're getting straight up and
you're getting up and the medic can't hold Cian Healy down, ends up having a broken arm, like, because Cian Healy would throw him out off the pit, you know what I mean?
So that's what I thought when he carried, like when he was holding his arm, I thought when he carried, I go, oh my god, what's he, like, he's going to come, he's making this worse, whatever he's done. But now, yeah, obviously it seems to have been highlighted.
Wayne Bard's had a fantastic game, I thought. I think he's the best referee out there right now. But has he looked right and sees Scott's playing towards an injured player?
I was surprised he didn't blow that up.
Scotland, like, let's just give this guy.
And we're not asking, and this isn't about Wayne Barnes making a judgment about a head injury. No. It's simply there's a man getting treated there, and you're not sure what that treatment is for.
Yeah.
And if the play's going that close, I was surprised he didn't blow
it. It's a real challenge because referees want to keep continuity. So when a player goes down, they keep playing. I think everyone appreciates that's the right thing to do. But I think they take it to extremes sometimes. And sometimes, like, you got to ruck right beside an injured player who's getting treated, which is actually just dangerous.
It is dangerous. Because if that falls over, I mean, there's no control. The one thing I don't like is sometimes, and we've seen it before, where there's a player getting down and a player with the ball will run directly for it because they know you can't defend
it.
That's
what Scotland did there.
Yeah.
I've no doubt.
You think that's what they did?
He looked up and goes, there's space here. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, man down.
It's hard to defend because there's someone on the ground. Like,
but it's also like if someone gets a knock or something like that, what's the first thing you do? You test them out and you go, right, okay, he's done a hammy or got a knock on the shoulder.
No, I mean while they're being treated. Because there's a hole. It's like running at the ref, which is kind of fair game.
But that's,
But all of Scotland are doing is exposing what's there. Yeah. Like, you can't blame them, really.
Okay. So, again, this is something which I think we're going to see more discussion about. We will move on to next week. So, Ireland already champions. This makes the equation very simple next week. Just win. Win, Grand Slam in Twickenham. So, look, I'm back of a question, and I forget who asked me the question. Was how many times have Ireland won away in England and France in the Six Nations or the Five Nations? It's happened twice. 1948, Ireland's first Grand Slam, and 1972. And what was that about 1972? It was the non-completed championship. With
Ollie Campbell.
Scotland and Wales didn't travel to Ireland because the troubles. France actually played an extra friendly that year, but Ireland won the first two games, which were England and France away. That's the full list, gents. This is a big ask, no matter what the year. We're champions already. This doesn't matter. That is the historical context of what Ireland are trying to do this weekend. And it's on Paddy's Day.
Yeah, such an interesting dynamic as well, because tradition, like, it's a bit of a role reversal, say, from last year and years gone as well, with this really confident, assured, clinical Irish side versus a wounded and, you know, a wounded England team that are going to be doubting themselves and have nothing to lose and are going to be unbelievably passionate and fired up, but probably don't have the class that this Irish team has now.
They were not good in Paris.
No, they weren't. And they have a few problems. I don't think Ford should be starting at 10 for them. I think that Farrell should be running the show. they should. The 10-12 thing, it works against the smaller teams because Ford is unbelievable on the front foot. And they, I mean, the fact is, a lot of those wins they've had in that run were against Australia, really weak Australia team. They never got tested against New Zealand. Ireland beat them in the Aviva last year. And I think they've been exposed a little bit. You know, I think a lot of the teams in the Six Nations have taken a step forward, and I'm not sure if they have. They don't have a back row. I think, like, Vunipola.
They don't know, but they don't know who they want to pick in their back row. He chops and changes so much, it, like, don't they? And it's like, well, what do you want to do with it? Like, you know, like, they brought back in Haskell this week on the bench, at least.
I don't think he's the answer.
No, he's not, but I think they're just like, we need some physicality in there against the French at the breakdown. That's, and he's got, like, he's about, what, seven or eight players. He's chopping and changing. And
Sam Simmons is now completely out.
Nathan Hughes is gone then. And it's like what do you want?
Underhill's injured as well, is he?
No, he's still in, isn't he?
No, he's still in, Bob. I think. But it's a contrast to how Stuart Lancaster used to play, and he used to have his settled team. You know, there's nearly two settles when he was doing it. Now it's like, okay, well, who do you want? Like, and I find it interesting as well about Ford. You know, like, I think people talk about Farrell the whole time. Ford, is, like, all we talk about nearly is a lot of the time is Sexton. You know, and Ford gets hardly any mentions. You know, and you want your 10, especially at the international level, to be.
But
stepping up so much.
But are we missing? Are you missing the point if we concentrate on Ford front foot? You can't be in the front foot if you're getting blown away at the breakdown, and that's happened two games in a row. There's a good Alex Lowe is an interesting piece in the Times, and he quotes Eddie Jones and James Haskell, and they are pointing towards the Aviva Premiership and saying that the way that teams are playing the game is not helping England at international level when they step up. So Haskell says, we're coming from the Premiership where no one competes at the breakdown into the Six Nations where every team is throwing lots of people into it. And Jones is blaming the Premiership and blaming the quality of the ball carrier. He's not blaming Eddie Jones. I want to be clear about that, apparently.
Yeah.
But is there something there? Do they have the players that can compete? Is this a style they're just not used to competing for?
It's pretty funny
the
way this comes up, like, oh, you know, if Ireland don't win and England win, it's the Pro 14 isn't good enough.
Yeah, it's still the Pro 14's fault.
It's another.
And then when England starts struggling, like, that's complete. They have so many good players. And Eddie Jones went on an incredible run with those players. And the majority of them played in the Premiership. It's like, I don't think he's picking the right team at the moment. I think having Laws at six is an issue. I think he's a top quality player, but he should be in the second row.
He's out now this week.
He's out now as well. Yeah. And I miss him, actually. He's been really good, but he's just not a back row.
No,
they don't have a back row that's been able to compete. Their ball gets slow, and like we said, if Ford's getting slow ball, not on the front foot, he looks incredibly average.
He's not going to be like a Johnny can step up and carry and try and make something happen. Ford's not going to carry.
Johnny, he'll make something happen. Like, I think Farrell will do the same. That's why I think you got to put Farrell in 10.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do with the centres then. I'll bring Tuilagi back.
Or do you bring TO 12 and push Elliot Daly in?
Potentially, I'd bring Tuilagi back. They've got to do something. He is a top quality player. He's been out for a long time, but they've got to change it.
But if they have TO, they're going to have a bit of balance there as well. So Joseph comes back into the mix because he's an attacking threat, isn't he? More so than having him outside. But look, it's. To go back to the point on about like saying about the Premiership, that's to me that's other rubbish. Like, you know, it's like, you know, because you go in there and you go, oh, well, we do this in the Premiership with our clubs, but you target each game. You know the French are going to be strong at the breakdown. You change your team accordingly.
Exactly.
Just because we don't throw our players into the ruck. Well, sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. You don't. It's not a huge change.
If you're England. How do you set yourself up? So you've got your group of players there. How do you set yourself up in terms of team choice, but also tactically to play Ireland? Because we have still seen that Ireland are not the complete package in this championship. So if there's, I was listening to radio over the weekend, people were talking about potentially this is the greatest Ireland team of all time. I don't buy it. We're conceding a lot of chances. On other days, we are not talking about a Grand Slam here. We're not even talking about a championship.
So we've been exposed. I think one of the things that has come up quite widely and has actually been you've been able to see in games, been exposed in the wide channels. So I think England are going to try and expose us out there. I think the fact is this is England playing in their backyard trying to prevent Ireland from having a Grand Slam. Motivation will be easy. I think they'll absolutely rip into us, particularly first four or five phases. What they'll be saying is these guys have scored against us before with Joe's special plays. First five phases, let's be rock solid and make sure we don't concede any line breaks. And then we'll just basically take them on physically. They'll go through 20, 25 phases and we'll be able to front up because we're playing in Twickenham and because we're unbelievably fired up and we're going to beat them on the gain line. Yeah. I think that's what the kind of psyche they're going to be going into the game
I think they're going to go with the breakdown a good bit as well. I think if you look at where we kind of have struggled is against France. They really like slowed down ball, got the defence, as you say.
They made it really messy.
They made it messy. Yeah. And as just, they could slow it down, and then if they, the French were getting line speed and putting our normal like loops and stuff like that under pressure, and it didn't look great. So you've got to look at that blueprint and go, okay, if we leave the ruck, Ireland get ball, and Ireland again always have like over 60% of possession, which is huge. So and with Scotland, sometimes target us was at that breakdown as well, and like we can give away penalties. We have a lot of balls, so it's about timing. I think that they will actually put a lot of pressure at that breakdown.
And Farrell knows Sexton so well that, like, I think
there's a bit of a counter to that, which is Andy Farrell knows Owen Farrell pretty well.
That's very true. No, it's just a really interesting dynamic, and the fact that Sexton and Farrell are going to be fronting up again in the Aviva and the Saracens Leinster game in a few weeks as well. It's just, I think there's so much to this game, but yeah, they're going to put a lot of pressure on Johnny and Murray. I think they're going to look at them and go, who are the key people here? How do we make Sexton and Murray feel uncomfortable? It's really hard to do, but if they can do that, they can squeeze but Ireland a little bit.
How do you make them feel uncomfortable?
Murray, it's very difficult because the pressure is so good.
Yeah, but sort of like a Glasgow move.
You can even go back to what Alan Wynne was doing. You hold on to Murray, and you're literally sitting on him. Yeah.
But you
make the ball slow. You don't let him get in there. When he is there, then he's in a rush to get the ball away because he's been held up. You try and take him out of the game a little bit, you know, and then guys look around and okay, when he does his box kicking and stuff like that, it's very hard to set up to defend that. But look, you have to do, it's the dark arts again coming into it. But it's even holding down Johnny as well and
just getting him ruffled.
Yeah, just trying to frustrate him, put him off his game. You know, like even okay, he wasn't playing last week, but like we used to target Mike Brown and try and frustrate him and kind of give him a couple of niggles or a couple of little digs at the rucks and just to put him off his game because he'd be going after. He had that personality of he'd be rattling me, looking for you, and he's not doing his job that he's supposed to do for the team. And I think even with Farrell, he gets a bit frustrated as well. So
who was a go with Farrell in the tunnel in the warm-up?
Peter Manny.
But that's the other thing, like Ireland got a lot of dividend from high balls at the weekend between Johnny and Murray. So I think England would be saying we need to be rock solid in the air. Yeah. They probably have a better back three for the aerial battle than Scotland do. So I mean, that's a source of attack that's basically gone for Ireland potentially if England can dominate that. So they'd be saying, guys, they're going to stick up a couple of bombs early. We have to win those. Mm. We have to dominate the air.
Right, predictions.
I think Ireland will win. They have the momentum, chance to do something special.
Are you going to tell the bookies about it before the game this time?
No, I'm just going to tell everyone, get it right and not make money from it again. I'm good like that.
Okay. Oh, I don't know. It's such a big ask. Like I'm on the fence a little bit. Like I do think it's head and heart stuff. I think Ireland will nick it, but Jesus, like you certainly have earned it. Like when you play England and France away from home to win a Grand Slam,
doesn't get any harder. Oh, I just think this team has something special in them, and I think it's been building for a while.
Yeah,
and like you know, in terms of relatively rude health, in terms of key players like being available.
And another positive is we haven't really fired a shot or done anything against teams. We haven't like said, "Oh my God, we're playing unbelievably well." Like we're sometimes grinding.
This is like perfect rugby.
Yeah.
No, I take your point. England have a bit to fight for. It's firstly they're stop Ireland get the Grand Slam, which is great. But they're England. It's not quite the same motivation as Ireland playing England. You know what I mean? It's not the same.
Not far.
But it doesn't take much for England to finish fifth in this year's championship, which is remarkable think. Okay, so that's what we're talking about here. I'm going for the draw, which would be an absolute captain buzzkill.
And you will put your money where your mouth is.
Going for the draw.
Gentleman's agreement, is it?
Going for the draw.
I'm not going for the draw. I'm saying I can see a draw happen.
Oh, I can see a win, a loss, or a draw. Go on, Andy. Get off the fence.
Okay, draw.
Okay.
All right.
Draw. There.
I'm calling the draw. Fiver, done. We'll be back with some of your Twitter questions and a couple of other interesting stories from the week.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
We're going to take a look at some of your social media questions. Remember to use the hashtag AskTHY if you want to get a question in for next week, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at @THYRugby. First one is from Sean Reynolds. If Sean O'Brien has passed fit after the weekend, because he got a bit of a bang, does he parachute in for Levy, or will he go to the bench and come on for impact? Or does he even deserve to make the 23, considering how good the back row has been, and should Joe show faith in them? Can you drop Dan Levy?
Feel sorry for Shawnee, but no way is he going to be playing next weekend. Like,
if he got through even 50 minutes at the weekend, he'd have a sniff again on the bench. But like Geordie was really impressive when he came on.
Yeah, was.
There's no way. Like Joe expects even the best of players to get some game time before we'd parachute them in. So
it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. But it wasn't enough. But I think the lads have done so much as well. I think Levy, you can't move him. And then, as you say, completed the impact from Geordie when he came on when we were. Had a bit of a low moment in the match.
He made some really strong carries.
Yeah, really strong.
Just getting hard on that front foot, those game lines.
Bit of positive news for Ulster last, watching him play.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, honestly, he looked class. Yeah. He really did.
Yeah. Yeah. Did Shane Logan refer to that in this video?
I don't think he did.
No. Okay, right. That was low.
Good.
Next one. I see what you did there. Well done, Jimmy. Dara Golden. If you could mic up any Irish player for a match, who would it be and why? So we had two suggestions in after that. One, Johnny Sexton, because he's just always having a rabbit.
That'd be you just hear beeped out for the whole thing, wouldn't it? It's like, oh, that's not positive.
One long beep.
There was an interesting one when Zeebo was mic'd up before. That was quite good for Munster, I believe.
Sky did it, didn't they?
Yeah, and he was quite good.
I'd like to get one of the front rowers. You hear them huffing and puffing, and they wouldn't say a word for the game because it'd be blowing so hard. Like,
well, it was interesting. You know what I mean? Another suggestion said Peter Clausey. Get the claw back in the day.
He would have been another one huffing and puffing. No, like,
he would have been one for a camera. He would have been one for a camera on him on the base of his boot for his studs. see where they're going.
How much damage it does.
Exactly. Yeah.
50% on human, 50% on turf. Like.
So apart from any other current Irish forward,
has to be a forward.
Any?
Who? Carney?
Any?
Oh, any? Yeah. I don't know.
Peter be good.
It'd be okay. It'd be interesting. Yeah. I'm just trying to think. I'd prefer to have someone who'd mess a little bit and have a bit of crack out. A couple of smart comments.
James Lowe for Leinster could be interesting. He'd be great, laughing.
But he'd be fun. But you know, he'd be funny as well. Like, you know,
I think he would be good, and he'd know he's on the mic as well.
Yeah, exactly.
He'd commentate in his own breaks.
He probably would. Yeah. He'd be talking mid break.
I've got the ball. Yeah, take him on.
Here I go. Yeah, it'd be very good. Actually, it'd be interesting.
It would be good. Good question here from Ian. Hi, all of the pod. What do you make of Townsend's comment that Scotland are about 4 years behind Ireland in terms of development, and how do you see the teams developing to the World Cup pool? Because we are in the same World Cup pool along with Japan for 2019.
I'd say they're more than 4 years.
Really?
Yeah, but
that far?
Like, I keep going back to it, but their big problem is they've only two teams.
Okay. Yeah.
They need to get to a place where they minimum three teams where they can get close to Ireland, I believe. They just don't have the pool of players. There was talk of them buying Worcester, and there was talk of them, like, which would have, I actually think, been quite a smart idea, because they suddenly
there's Newcastle, because they're close to the border then as well.
That's been talked about as well.
Has been talked about, and there are a good few, like Ali Hogg and stuff plays for Newcastle. There's a good few Scots there, but like...
is he still playing?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, still trucking, yeah. So, yeah, like, it's a challenge for them. Yeah. The thing is, I think they're playing a good brand. They've got a great coach now. They have a good core of players. But like, I think what this Six Nations approved for Ireland is having three tight heads, having
depth.
three out halves. Yeah.
But that's
just so key.
And it goes back to, if he's going to say, I agree with the kind of 4 years, if you're going back to a last World Cup, but like where Ireland were in terms of we've a front line, and then we didn't have anyone in behind, we had no strength and depth, we relied heavily on players.
Even the 2009 Grand Slam.
Yeah.
The reason we won that is because we pretty much didn't get an injury.
Look at the starting squads for every game. We picked the same players for every game.
The only person who dropped out, I think, was Mal. Yeah. Dropped out for Mick O'Driscoll, and I think that was because he was late for a meeting or something like that. Honestly, it was nothing to do with injury.
No, it's unreal when you look back at it. I thought I was seeing things. I was looking at it before when we had Tomás O'Leary in, and I was looking and going, oh my, have they got this right? And I had to double check to make sure that what I was looking at was right.
But that won't happen today.
No.
Physically.
But it couldn't. That's what I mean. You need, that's why. But I think they're, like I said before, the remit for Joe was, okay, when we lose frontliners, we've got to have strength and depth, you know. And I think that's now we have two or three. And that's where Scotland are. They have those frontliners. Again, we talked about it. You look at the bench. Like Ireland's bench, I was like, yeah, fine. Like if they started as well, I'd be extremely happy. Yeah. Scotland's just like, oh, he's all right. Yeah. Like,
there's a jump.
Yeah, exactly. He's not going to be a huge impact. Yeah.
Going back to your point about a third team, are Ireland doing fifth province by stealth with Decky and Les back on the road again?
It's a great move, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, London Irish.
Yeah, great move for both.
I think they'll go well.
Yeah,
they work well together.
And it looks like Les Kiss is more, it's hands on.
Yeah,
as opposed
but that's
to
the way
that was always the way.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm talking about the difference between that and the Ulster way, where he's more of the
exactly,
director,
and that suits him down it to does, the ground. Yeah. In that Decky will manage all the day to day press, dealing with the players, and Kissy can just focus on what he's really good at, which is the technical side of coaching, yeah. and he'd be excellent at it.
Yeah,
and Decky would be nice to everyone, and just be nicest,
the smiling assassin. Yeah.
Okay, next one from Jason Ward. Given his immeasurable importance to the World Cup effort, should Johnny be given the summer off? Also, depth at 10, clearly not as strong as other positions, so this would provide Joey Carberry a much needed prolonged run at out half.
Yeah, personally, I think given the summer off and you've got a chance
a
to pardon?
I said not a terrible idea.
But also kind of to
a summer sabbatical.
To give, if we're looking at to give backup players just a chance to get some game time at that level, but to play eight, like if they can get a good 60 minutes, 70 minutes, you know, and just
Joe will have to, or he'll have to make sure Johnny's in good form when he tells him though. Johnny's just
he'll want to play, absolutely.
But I think his wife will be happy that he's staying at home for the summer
for about a week.
Yeah.
Says, can I go to Australia too, please? Next one from Jerry Green. This is a great problem to have right now. Bundiaki, Geiring, Rose, Farrell and Henshaw are all fit and on form. Who are Ireland's first choice 12-13 combo going into a World Cup quarter final? So if they're all fit right now, who do you pick as your 12-13?
Very difficult. For me, I would go on opposition who we're playing. I'd kind of cater towards that.
It's avoiding it a bit.
Right, now, I honestly...
You're going for a draw, yeah?
Do you know what? I'd go for Henshaw, Ringrose.
Yeah?
Yeah. Okay. I think that...
Is Bundy the next man?
Yeah. Impact, but think of the impact he'd bring coming off the bench. Like, you know, just if you just need a bit of go forward, but he can play 12-13 as well. Just think that triumphant of Johnny, Robbie and Gary, and they play with Leinster all the time, and it's seamless for them. Like, they know exactly what each person does.
I'd say the same.
No Leinster bias here?
Lots of Leinster bias, but like I think Aki's class. I just think Henshaw is a little bit more to his game.
Okay.
Like Aki's done an incredible job for Ireland, the Six Nations. And the only thing I'd say is that pick and go he did at the weekend right on the line was a terrible option, but apart from that, he's just been seamless.
So there's two more little things we should cover before we let yous go. Montpellier game you were watching at the weekend, Jimmy?
Oh yeah, did you see that? In the warm up.
So this is a new way of warming up with your teammates.
I tell you.
So tell us what happened.
So it was Montpellier against Racing, and the warm up, the TV camera goes down to the sideline, and it's Bismarck Duplessis against, I think it was the sub hooker as well. And all of a sudden, Diggs thrown.
Was it in the scrumming?
No.
Scrummaging part?
No, it just seems to just, the camera just goes down on the sideline.
What? Because that would be completely fine.
No, because normally, like, you do a 5-on-5 scrum. Yeah. Like, and sometimes it does get a bit heated, and that's good before a game.
But before a game, Diggs thrown.
I've never seen it get heated. I've never seen Diggs thrown.
Yeah.
Diggs thrown live on TV, and then they go out and win 41-3. This could be the new way to warm up. I'm sure there's no love lost between them, but actually made me think of, like, I saw that. I was like, oh my God, who throws Diggs? Normally in training. And then against certain teams when I was in England, if the forwards weren't kind of, do you know the way you get a sense of, oh, the lads are up for a game, or there's a little bit of a lull and lads are a little bit quiet, right? We need to get the blood flowing. We need lads to get kind of, you know, a bit pepped up for things. They used to start in the scrum and someone would just start throwing a dig, get a fight going, and the lads are right. It's like, all right.
So this is Eddie Jones next week. Twickenham pulls Dylan Hartley aside saying, listen, Dylan, I need you to hit someone.
Yeah.
Who? No problem, boss. Is it going to be Keith O'Mahony? No, it's going to be Owen Farrell. I need you to hit Owen Farrell.
He won't be choosing Owen Farrell.
No. George Ford.
who was the king in Northampton of throwing a dig? Like,
We had some Dorian West coaching. He got involved in a couple of
when he was coaching.
I remember there's one stage Christian Short. I wasn't involved. There was a mauling drill or whatever with the forwards line out more, and Christian Short had, like, kind of swam up the side and got his fingers in the ball, and Dorian was obviously in control of this. Dorian put his hand in and started to bend Christian Short's fingers back, and is like, you're not the coach trying to break his finger. It was, and then it turned into digs. Like, it was crazy.
Oh my God.
We were doing kicking, of course, with the back, so we were all right.
Who was the king of the dig at Leinster?
Jesus, good question.
There weren't too many. We were, you know, we used to look after each other in training.
Nice boys.
Very nice boys.
Nah, come on.
Come on, there's always good.
There was a few people over there. Like Stan Wright used to get a bit fired up during training sometimes and everyone would just run as soon as he got angry.
Cause yeah,
his
temper.
His fists were the size of sledgehammers. So yeah. No one.
It's always, I always used to think of forwards, it was always in mauls, or it was never really scrums. I think it was always in mauls because someone would get in there and someone would pull them back.
Yeah, Mike McCarthy was fond of a little wrestle. Like he'd be more a wrestler than a. Like he'd be wrestling someone on the ground. I think he'd just be doing it for the crack. But in a mauling session, you're like, where's Macker? And you look around, he'd have someone, one of the poor academy lads in a headlock on the ground.
Yeah, that was always another one, wasn't it? To go for the target the young lads. That's someone's angry.
Exactly.
Where's the academy guy? They're like on the floor. And if an academy guy threw a dig back, you'd be like, well, fair play.
Yeah, exactly.
Very last thing. Did you see the double red card from the French under 20 game? France against England. That was extreme. That was like a flashback to something I thought we'd left behind. The Brian O'Driscoll incident in the Lions tour. Yeah. Extraordinary. If anyone's out there hasn't seen it, go look at this. There's going to be significant suspensions handed out for this for the two French lads picked up the English hooker, I believe, and just dropped him. It's extraordinary footage.
They spear him today, or
they just lift. They both lift him up. It is like
they flip him and
it was right up in the air. He is head. It isn't like above the horizontal bit. He is completely perpendicular to the ground,
wow.
And he sees it coming, which is the frightening thing in the footage. You can see his arm.
Does he drop?
He's straight down onto the ground. He's very, very lucky boy. Wow. There's going to be significant suspension handed out to those two.
It was way worse than the Dricko one. Like,
it was way extraordinary. Way worse. How do you do it? Anyway, yeah, so there you can get on your YouTube after him.
I'll get it now.
Yeah, okay. That's it. Roll on Paddy's Day. Roll on a hopeful Grand Slam. Go Ireland. We'll let it go. Thanks to James and Kev, to Alan Lachnan for producing, and Paul Donegan was on sound. We'll be back next Monday with a new podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud, and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. This has been The Hard Yards. I'm Enda McGeady. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.